Super, thank you.
Much better.
Okay. What we're going to do is take each grouping and in our bills and hear from the House, then hear from the Senate, so we can begin this learning process. So we're going to start with House Commerce. Tom Pender from House Research will talk about the commerce portions of the bill. And thank you. It's been a long day for folks. Thank you, Mr. Pender, for being here.
Madam Chair, before we start, maybe we should point out what's been put in our binders.
All right. Why don't you do that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe staff can tell us. It looks like we have, I think we just have a copy of the House bill and the Senate bill, and then we have a Senate summary. We have a House summary, hopefully. Maybe not. I guess we'll let the staff point that out when they go through it. Super. And I don't know that, Madam Chair, that we have copies of the bill for everyone in the audience, but it's we're just going through the bills as they pass the House and the Senate. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Mr. Pender.
Madam Chair and members, what I'm going to be summarizing is Article 5 of the House bill, which deals with commerce. This article is in the bill because Representative Hilty's Energy Policy and Finance Committee has jurisdiction over the entire Commerce Department budget and not just the part of it that deals with energy. And so Article 5 includes things on banking and insurance and other related kinds of businesses.
Madam Chair, what page does that start on in the House
13.
Bill?
Representative Dill. Mr. Pender, can you help?
Madam Chair and Representative Dill, it starts on page 113
thank you.
Of the House bill and goes to page 168. It includes 73 sections in all. And the sections that deal with various subjects are kind of sprinkled through the Article 5. They're not all grouped together because of the way they fall in the statute. So I'm going to try to sort of cover them in subjects. And the first subject area I'm going to cover is the commerce licensing technology provisions. This came from a bill authored in the House by Representative Knuth, and it affects three professions the Commerce Department licenses: realtors, real estate appraisers, and insurance agents. And what this does is creates a way for paying for technology that's already being used by these professions to keep track of their continuing education credits. Right now, the department is contracted with a vendor who has set up this system and charges these license holders each time they enter information into the system about their continuing ed. And these professions would rather just be charged a flat amount as part of their licensing fee. And so what this bill does is authorize the department to charge a surcharge of up to $40 for every 2 years. So the licenses go for 2 years, so it's up to $40 every 2 years. And that money then would end up going through the department and entering into the vendor contract. The next thing I'm going to talk about is the subject of vehicle protection product warranties. And this is from a bill that was authored in the House by Representative Tillsbury. And what it does is set up a new regulatory system that we don't have now to have some regulation of businesses that warrant products designed for vehicle protection, such as theft devices and similar things that are installed on vehicles, usually as new vehicles. And these provisions are basically set up to make sure that whoever makes that warranty either has a warranty insurance policy behind it or has sufficient net worth to be able to cover the warrant, their obligations under the warranties if the products turn out not to work. The next group of items I'm going to cover involve banking and other financial institutions type items. Most of these came from a bill authored in the Commerce Department and authored in the House by Representative Atkins. And this involves things like a refinement of requirements that on the collateral that banks have to post when they accept local government deposits, a limit on what payday lenders can assess against their customers for bounced checks under certain circumstances, changing a restriction on how much state-chartered banks can borrow from the home loan bank system, eliminating notification to the commissioner every time a bank establishes a new ATM. Commissioner doesn't feel that that's necessary anymore. And probably the most significant thing is changes in our laws dealing with mortgage, what are called mortgage originators, meaning mortgage lenders and mortgage brokers. And these provisions provide stronger enforcement authority to the Department of Commerce and higher requirements to get a license to enter these businesses and also higher licensing fees to enter these businesses. And there are other bills going around the legislature this session dealing with mortgage originators in other ways, but these provisions focus on Commerce Department regulation of that industry. There's an item dealing with sale of long-term care insurance to accommodate the entry of Minnesota into the long-term care insurance partnership program and establishing new requirements for agents that want to sell long-term care insurance. They have to take some education, especially on that subject. And then there are a number of provisions on auto insurance from a bill authored by Representative Atkins to basically increase what a variety of things that people can get when they're in an auto accident in terms of getting compensation for wage loss and funeral expenses and other compensation for other things that happen to people when they're in an auto accident. Most of that is increasing numbers that were enacted in the 1970s and haven't been increased since then. There's an item limiting the extent to the ways in which healthcare providers can contact accident victims after an accident, for instance, saying they can't call them at their home and try to urge them to come in to get their health care or have an examination. And there was a House floor amendment to add attorneys to that section, putting them under these same restrictions that are being introduced for health care providers. Two sections of this article that are especially significant are sections 43 and 44. Those are the sections that deal with fees the Commerce Department charges for registering mutual funds in Minnesota. And the registration fee for that is 1/20 of 1% of the value of the shares that those mutual funds include to sell in Minnesota during the year. And current law, which was put in I think in 2001, sets a cap of the total amount collected on those fees of $25 million, and then says that if the Commerce Department determines at the end of the year that more than $25 million came in, it gets refunded to the mutual fund. The difference gets refunded to the mutual fund companies. And these sections 42, 43, and 44 eliminate that cap on the total amount collected, so that if more than $25 million comes in, which is the case now, the state simply gets to keep that money and not rebate it to the mutual fund companies. And it might come up why there are two identical sections in the bill that make that same change. Sections 43 and 44 are almost identical, and the bill makes the same change in them. And the reason is that one of them expires August 1st, and the other one goes into effect August 1st. And so that's why we have we need to change both of them make this work. Then there are a number of, I'm almost done here, then there are a number of sections of the bill that come from a bill authored by Representative Dabney dealing with what his bill calls debt management services. And these are people who our current laws call debt prorators. And what they do is if debtors are in severe financial difficulty, they can go to one of these firms and that firm will analyze their financial situation, try to figure out how hopeless it is, and if it seems salvageable, they try to negotiate with the person's creditors to try to get extended payment terms, and then the debtor typically pays an entire monthly amount then to the debt services provider, and the debt services provider then divides up that payment among the creditors that are part of this deal. And the items that are in this bill strengthen the Commerce Department's regulation of these businesses, and in particular require for the first time that out-of-state companies that are doing this kind of business in Minnesota, mostly over the Internet or by mail, also register with the department. And under current law, they don't have to do that. There's a Section 54 of the bill increases the annual registration fee from $100 to $1,000 for businesses people typically call credit repair providers, and those are a little bit different. And that didn't come from Representative Dabney's bill; it came from the Department of Commerce's bill. And these are people who try to fix up your credit history so that you can get a loan. So they'll go over your credit history, and if you say that something on there is inaccurate or whatever, they'll try to get that fixed for you so that your credit looks a little bit better when you're applying for a loan. And then the final two sections I'll mention are two relating to petroleum products. One of them devotes part of an inspection fee that's already in place, makes it available for people to fix up their homes to improve their renewable energy situation, make their homes more energy efficient. And there's also a section dealing with petroleum product dealers that prevents them from discriminating against people who are enrolled for low-income energy assistance. And that applies only if that distributor or retailer has signed a contract with the state to participate in that program. It doesn't affect people that haven't chosen to participate. So that's the commerce section of the bill.
Are there questions, members, on any of these parts?
Madam Chair, that doesn't include all the energy provisions from that are commerce sections of the bill, correct?
That's correct.
Madam Chair, I'd like to, if there's no other questions, I'd like to ask if we could have our Senate Commerce Counsel briefly go through. Chris Stang, come up. Thank you. Mr. Stang, to just go through the same sections and just tell us where they're at in the Senate and what's their status, what bill they're in. If you could do that for us, please.
Madam Chair, thank you. I've reviewed Article 5 of the House engrossment, and this is my best read now on where these provisions are at in the Senate. Mr. Pender mentioned the Vehicle Protection Product Bill. In the Senate, that's being carried in Senator Tomasoni's Economic Development Omnibus Bill, and I believe the provisions are virtually identical. Did Mr. Pender mention the debt counseling bill? Okay. That bill is carried by Senator Scheid. It's SF-1532. It has passed the Senate Commerce Committee. It's now on general orders. There are some differences in the two bills, I believe. The Department Technology Surcharge Bill in the Senate is Senator Scheid's SF-1628. That bill is in the Finance Committee. And it was scheduled this morning, but apparently pulled off the agenda. I just spoke to Mr. Watson. He wasn't sure why, so I don't know where that's at. The banking provisions Mr. Pender mentioned are carried separately in Senator Sparks, SF-1920. That bill has passed the Senate, and the provisions are identical to the House provisions. I don't know if the House is carrying a separate bill on the banking bill over there or not, but these provisions have passed the Senate in a separate bill. The predatory lending bill of Senator Shides, Senate File 1547, passed the Senate Commerce Committee. I know there was some controversy associated with it. Senator Shy did not, I don't believe she did, she pursued it in judiciary, and it didn't meet deadline in the Senate. That's Senate File 1547. The auto no-fault provisions, Mr. Pender mentioned, the Senate did not hear at all, so we have no position on that. I believe a bill was introduced on that. Senate Commerce did not hear it. Similarly, I'm not familiar with the securities registration fee provisions that Mr. Pender mentioned. I don't think that at least the Senate Commerce Committee addressed that. I'm not sure if Senator Tomasoni's Budget Committee, which carried the Department of Commerce budget in the Senate, looked at that either. I just don't know. I think those are the major provisions that Mr. Pender outlined.
Thank you. Now, are there any additional any questions for either counsel? Don't see any questions. So with that, we will begin on energy, and we'll start with Mr. Eloff and House Research.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'll be going through Article 6 of the bill on energy, which starts on page 168 and goes through page 185. Section 1 is from House File 86, which was authored by Representative Hackbarth. It designates the City of Elk River as the state energy city. Section 2 is from House File 295, authored by Representative Welty. This creates a program in the Department of Administration creates an incentive, a program to reward employees who suggest energy-saving ideas that are implemented and save energy in state agencies. The next three sections of the bill are from amendments on the floor that were authored by Representative Hilty that deal with the independent spent fuel storage installation at Monticello. Section 3 indicates that if a disposal site becomes available outside the state, the dry casks will be moved to that facility first before waste from the spent nuclear fuel nuclear storage pool at the plants. And this section simply adds Monticello to the currently existing Prairie Island language to do that. In a similar manner, Section 4 indicates that if another site becomes available, the nuclear waste must be moved immediately. And again, that is currently drawn or references Prairie Island. This change also includes the new storage site at Monticello. Section 5 directs Xcel Energy to transfer to the renewable development account $500,000 annually for each dry cask containing spent nuclear fuel that will be located at Monticello when the plant is in operation, and $7.5 million each year that the plant is not in operation, if ordered to do so by the Public Utilities Commission. And the commission is instructed to make that order if it finds by preponderance of the evidence that the public utility did not make good faith effort to remove the spent nuclear fuel to a permanent or interim storage site out of the state. Section 6 of the bill is from House File 2246, authored by Representative Westrom. It addresses the renewable energy production incentive statute, and it does three things. It increases by $500,000 the amount coming from the renewable development account that goes towards renewable energy production incentives. It allows up to $500,000 annually to be used for production incentives for landfill gas recovery facilities, new landfill gas recovery facilities. It also creates appropriates up to $1 million a year to be used for a new grant program for qualified on-farm biogas recovery facilities that's discussed later in the bill, and leaves $1 million annually to be used for renewable energy production incentives for those on-farm biogas recovery facilities. Section 7 of the bill is from House File 1644, authored by Representative Hilty. It makes some changes in funding for the University of Minnesota's Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment. At the bottom of page 171, it essentially changes the activities that are funded under this subdivision. The new ones are listed at the bottom of that page. And also on page 172, the subdivision for funding was to expire June 30th, 2008. This section of the bill extends that date to 2010. Section 8 of the bill is from House File 1392, authored by Representative Hilty, dealing with hydrogen, and it essentially deletes language that directed the Department of Commerce and the Department of Administration to identify opportunities for demonstration of new hydrogen technologies to now move to identifying opportunities for their actual deployment when feasible. Similarly, Section 9 also contains language regarding deployment rather than demonstration. Section 10 is also part of the hydrogen bill. It instructs the Department of Commerce to coordinate and administer directly or through contract a roadmap for the Minnesota Hydrogen Initiative that essentially achieves the state hydrogen goal. And the roadmap is to establish a vision, goals, general timeline, and strategies, and measurable milestones for achieving those goals. Subdivision 2 of this provision also makes grants from the Commissioner of Commerce to award that contract for putting together the roadmap. Section 11 is an amendment, I believe, that was authored by Representative Hilty, which extends the life of the Legislative Energy Electric Task Force by 1 year, from June 30th, 2007 to June 30th, 2008. Section 13 of the bill concerns Clean Energy Resource Team, otherwise known as CERTS, which I believe have been funded for a number of years, but this is the first time they're actually being put into statute. It outlines their powers and duties and directs that the Commissioner of Commerce can assist them in achieving their goals. Section 14 of the bill is from House File 1214, authored by Representative Knuth. It establishes a wind energy development revolving loan fund for rural wind energy projects, which awards loans up to $100,000 to each project at an interest rate of 1.5% a year. Section 15 of the bill is from House File 2246, authored by Representative Westrom. It essentially follows through on what I described earlier. Section 15 defines qualified landfill gas recovery facilities that are now made eligible to receive renewable energy production incentive payments. Section 16 essentially does the same. Section 17 also allows gas generated from on-farm biogas recovery facilities to be eligible for renewable energy production incentives. Right now, only gas generated from the facilities that is used to produce electricity is eligible for those incentives. This provision allows just gas production to be eligible for those incentives. Section 18 is also from Representative Westrom's bill. It creates a grant program for on-farm biogas recovery facilities that can be awarded up to $500,000. And it sets forth the rules for that program and appropriates up to $1 million a year from the renewable development account for those grants.
Madam Chair, can I just interrupt?
Yes, Mr.
That's okay. What kind of gas, what type of gas are we talking about?
Well, it would be gas
for
from a
fuel for a tractor or a truck or a car?
Certainly could be, yes. Or okay. Or possibly pipelined, if that's possible.
Okay.
Section 19 is also from House File 2246, authored by Representative Westrom. It essentially states that wind energy conversion projects have a two-year period after they begin operating when there's a rebuttable presumption that they're not a private or public nuisance, and after that two-year period is up, they cannot be declared a private or public nuisance. Section 20, also from House File 2246, provides that petroleum violation escrow funds, which are funds that are left over from, I believe, the 1980s, oil overcharge money, back when price controls were still on petroleum. Those funds continue to accrue to the state and earn interest. This section provides that those monies be used for grants for K through 12 schools to develop energy conservation or renewable energy projects, grants up to $500,000. Section 21 is also from House File 1214, authored by Representative Knuth. It establishes a rural wind energy development program that would assist rural entities in making projects real by providing legal, engineering, and financial services, helping communities identify whether or not they have favorable wind resources, the like. Section 22 is from House File 1392, Representative Hilty's hydrogen bill. It establishes that Commissioner of Labor and Industry and Department of Commerce and other agencies develop recommendations to make sure that hydrogen fuel cell and related technologies all have uniform codes and standards. Section 23 also expands the use of hydrogen refueling station grants to include other commercially promising renewable hydrogen production systems. And finally, Section 24 is from House File 2306, also authored by Representative Hilty, that requires the Commissioner of Commerce to convene a group of stakeholders to look at the possibilities and potentials for interconnecting off-site renewable distributed generation energy projects. Group is supposed to convene and report back to the legislature by February 1st of 2008. That concludes Section 6, or Article 6, I'm sorry.
Question.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Just questions for members. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, when we're ready, I was just going to ask the Senate if they could pinch hit here because our energy person, counsel, had a sick child and had to leave suddenly and unexpectedly to take him out of school. So I think they can help us.
Super.
Madam Chair and members, turning to the Senate bill, Senate File 2096, we'll work off Article 2. And I guess I'll skip. It's on page 53 of the Senate bill. Do you want me to go through the appropriate? I'll briefly go through the appropriation riders just to point out which things we're funding, but we won't spend a whole lot of time on the amounts. I guess turning to page 54, there's an appropriation from the Telecommunication Access Minnesota Fund for the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People. And then we have a requirement on line 54.22 asking the Electrical Energy Task Force to study some environmental-friendly manufacturing processes for people that are formerly employed at the St. Paul Ford plant. The next section is the language that we have that appropriates from the Renewable Development Fund. That was part of the governor's House and Senate bills. I'll quickly go through the items. On page 55, lines 55.6 is the grants for the on-farm biogas. That was in the governor's proposal. 55.11 is the grant for the solar rebates. The next one is the continuing funding for the CERT program. The next one, number 4, was from a Senator Solon bill dealing with a study for sequestration of carbon. I believe the And we're funding that, the Senate's funding that out of the Renewable Development Fund. The next one, the Senate's doing their hydrogen program out of RDF money, $1 million. And then the number six is the Senate's version of appropriation for a partial funding for the rural wind and energy development revolving loan fund. And that's coming out of the RDF. The next portion that's coming out of the RDF is the there's $4 million per year that would go to either or both of IRE at the University of Minnesota and the AURI. The next section is the appropriation for Public Utilities Commission. Section 7, the next one is some language that is carried in all the Senate funding bills, tying the compensation increases to a 3.25 increase across the board when using general fund dollars. Again, this language is being carried in all the Senate funding bills, and when we later get to the funding portions in the spreadsheets, we'll show that the Senate is carrying a little bit higher amount in all the compensation increases lines. Section 8, this is kind of similar to what the House had in their bill dealing with expanding the what goes into the renewable development account and dealing with the Monticello plant. Section 9 was also part of that overall proposal. Maybe Senator Anderson, you remember that?
Section 9 is a piece that relates that Xcel had requested that relates to recovery of their expenditures for greenhouse gas reduction projects that went through the Energy Committee.
Right. Section 10 is, again, the similar to the House language probably, in the hydrogen fuel proposal. Section 11 deals with that also. And Section 12 is the new language requiring the roadmap and then the grants dealing with the hydrogen initiative. On page 60, Section 13, on line squeezed in there on line 60.12, is the Senate also extends the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, but does it all the way out to 2012. The next one, Section 14, is the Senate Rural Wind Energy Revolving Loan Fund language. Then Section 15 and 16 deal with the carbon sequestration studies. Section 15 defines the terms, and then Section 16 carries out the study. And Section 17 deals with the same item, but dealing with the geological survey part of it. And that's a quick rundown of the items that are in the Senate Energy article. Again, we have a little bit more pared-down version of that so for now. Until we get the side-by-side language, we can examine the differences between the two pieces in that.
Questions for council? I don't see any questions, and Mr. Helen arrived just in time to start off the House environmental portion.
Okay, Madam Chair and members of the Conference Committee, it's Article 2 in the House bill. And some of the language is from, there are some sections from the governor's bill, as there are in the Senate too, I know. I'll just start off with the first section. Includes managers of watershed districts and soil and water conservation district supervisors as public officials for purposes of campaign finance and public disclosure law. The second section clarifies an agency response with conditions for certain written requests made for approval or denial of a decision. This was part of our wetland bill that Representative Hansen carried. And Section 3 clarifies what revenue must be deposited in the environmental fund. That's in the governor's bill. Section 4 is another bill by Representative Hansen for venison distribution and reimbursement. It allows a $70 reimbursement from the Department of Agriculture to a meat processor who processes a donated deer for charitable purposes and food assistance. Section 5 is section that Representative Scalzi amended into the bill on the floor, prohibiting new licenses for minnow raising in wetlands being issued by the Commissioner of Agriculture when the wetland is acquired by federal or state waterfowl stamp proceeds. Section 6 is a technical section. I'm just trying to find it here. Relating to aquatic plants and wild animal species. It's from a bill that we had, and it's putting it in a different chapter in the statutes. Section 7 is plant pest grants. It authorizes the Department of Agriculture to make grants to or enter into agreements with municipalities, nurseries, and others on new and emerging issues related to plant pests. Section 8 is another technical section. A lot of these technical sections just have a statutory cross-reference or change statutes a little bit or change one word in a statute. So there are a number of technical sections in our bill. Section 9 contains 8 new definitions in the DNR statutes for native prairie, restored prairie, ecotype region, definitions of that sort. Section 10 relates to contracts, and this is from the DNR and the governor's bill. There's a new section that's put in the bill later on, and this just provides an exception for some of these services from the receipts going to the account that they did go to before. Section 11 provides specific information to be included in a DNR easement when they are consummated. Section 12 is another technical section just relating to forest resource assessment products that the commissioner may sell to the public. Section 13 is another technical section that with the exception provided for a later new statute that's put in here. Section 14, off-highway vehicle damage account, removes the sunset date for the off-highway vehicle damage account. Section 15 also relates to off-road vehicle, it prohibits DNR land in 4 counties. This was Representative Moe's amendment in committee. The counties are Beltrami, Cass, Crow Wing, and Hubbard from being used for off-road vehicle trails unless they're in designated off-road vehicle areas like the one up at Gilbert or they're approved by the legislature. Section 16 creates a DNR off-highway vehicle safety and conservation program utilizing off-highway vehicle clubs to assist on a volunteer basis. Section 17 allows money in the all-terrain vehicle account to be used for the maintenance of minimum maintenance forest roads. Section 18 requires the DNR to disseminate to the public prairie establishment guidance materials and resources, including seed selection and ecotype and species mix. This was something that Chair Ruginius wanted. Section 19 allows the Commissioner of Natural Resources to contract for or accept volunteers for emergency invasive species work for prevention and control. Section 20 allows penalty amounts for certain watercraft violations to go into the invasive species account. That's also from the governor's bill. Section 21 is a technical section. Section 22 creates the invasive species account with money deposited from watercraft license surcharges, the civil penalties that are in Section 20 as described before, and the new annual surcharge on non-resident fishing licenses. Section 23 is a technical section. Section 24 establishes the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area Advisory Council of 12 local individuals who must be consulted with by the DNR local manager before a major decision takes place within the recreation area. Section 25 allows kindergarten through 12 school classes to tour the Sudan Underground Mine State Park for free during the school year. This was something Representative Rukavina put in the bill as an amendment. Section 26 allows free motor vehicle entry and parking at the Croft Mine Historical Park and the Portsmouth Mine Lake Overlook within the Cuyuna Recreation Area. Representative Ward got the Cuyuna sections in the bill. Section 27 is a technical section. Section 28 defines community forest. We added, Representative Loeffler had a bill relating to forestry and pest control and shade trees, we included that bill in our bill on the floor. So there's a lot of technical sections in the bill, and I will not be describing those individually. 29 and 30 are technical sections from that bill. 31, broaden the practices eligible for cost share dollars within the DNR's Minnesota Relief Program. 32, technical. 33 is the definition of forest pests. 34, definition of shade tree pests. 36 is the definition of shade tree. 35 and 37 are technical. 38, we add forest pests and shade tree pests to the list of issues over which the DNR has general powers and duties. 39 is technical. Section 40 requires fees for uses of state forest lands to now be deposited in the Special Revenue Fund and appropriated to the DNR for service of these uses. That's from the governor's bill. Section 41 creates a forest resource assessment products and services account for photography and mapping services fees that may be annually appropriated to the DNR to produce the services. 42 through 45 are all technical relating to that pest and shade tree bill. 46 adds forest pests and shade tree pests to the list of issues, again, over which the DNR has general authority. Sections 47 through 55 are all technical relating to the shade tree and pest bill. Section 56, we give the Department of Natural Resources authority to provide technical and financial assistance to local units of government for managing urban forest ecosystem health. In Section 57, we assign the Tree Inspector Certification Program to the DNR from the Department of Agriculture. Section 58 is technical. Section 59 allows a bond purchaser of timber to request the release of the bond, which the DNR can grant if the purchaser pays the required down payment in cash plus interest. Representative Dill's, it was a bill by Representative Dill. Section 60 changes the allocation of payments for mineral leases in the mineral statutes from the general fund receiving 20% to a new minerals management account receiving that amount, with the remaining 80% credited to certain classes of land, the permanent school fund, counties, and taxing districts. Section 61 is technical. Section 62 is a deer license surcharge from Representative Hansen's bill, states what a new deer license surcharge may be used for, including deer management and processing payments for the venison donation charitable program. Section 63 is Representative McNamara's amendment that creates the Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area in Dakota County based on last year's law that where the university gave over 2,000 acres of land to the state in exchange for the stadium, the Gopher football stadium. Section 64 is technical. Section 65 and 66 both authorize the lifetime small game and sporting and lifetime sporting licenses to include trapping, which is retroactive to the 2001 license period. Section 67 is from Representative Hansen again. It establishes the $1 deer license surcharge on resident and non-resident deer licenses. Section 68 is the establishment of a $2 surcharge on non-resident fishing licenses. Section 69 prohibits any electronic licensing system commission on the new deer surcharge, also from Representative Hansen's bill, as is Section 70, which states a deer hunter may donate a deer with its tag number to a meat processor for charitable food purposes. Section 71 establishes the DNR fees for permits to conduct fishing contests around the state. Section 72 provides authority for the Board of Water and Soil Resources to issue penalty orders for violations under their authority. Section 73 requires Bowser to evaluate performance and financial information for local water management entities on a regular basis and reduce or withhold funding if local water management deficiencies are not corrected within a year's notice. This is in response to the legislative auditor's report earlier this year, and it's a bill by Representative Hansen on our side. Section 74 and 75 both allow authorized credit card use for payments by either a Soil and Water Conservation District employee or a Watershed District employee, heretofore prohibited. Section 76 clarifies the point of beginning to measure the width of ditch buffer strips when required by statute, and that those ditch buffer strips be planted in perennial vegetation. This is from a bill by Representative Hansen. 77 clarifies that perennial vegetation instead of grass will be maintained for permanent ditch buffer strips in statute. A lot of these sections relating to ditch buffers just change that it has to be perennial vegetation instead of grass, so a lot of them are going to be deemed by me as technical, and I won't describe them all. 78 is the same as the one I just described, 77. 79 allows a drainage authority to implement permanent buffer strips of perennial vegetation along a public drainage ditch to control erosion, improve water quality, and maintain efficiency. An approved project must be implemented under a statutory repair with accompanying damages, landowner notice, and statutory timelines. Section 80 requires annual reports by drainage authorities to Bowser on buffer strips, inspections, and violations. Section 81 includes in damages paid on a drainage ditch project the cost to restore permanent vegetative cover or a structural practice existing under a federal or state conservation program. Section 82, technical. Section 83 requires that a drainage system restores any perennial vegetative cover or structural practice that is disturbed or destroyed. Sections 84 to 87 are technical in nature. Section 88 requires the DNR to remove debris caused by a disaster or public emergency and which threatens public safety in public waters. This was a floor amendment by Representative Broad. Section 89 relates to a possible deed restriction by local units that can prohibit non-agricultural use after a wetland is drained under the statutory drainage exemption. Clarifies that ponds generally may not be used to satisfy wetland replacement requirements unless the pond functions as a wetland and includes pretreatment of runoff. Excuse me, some of these next sections all relate to the wetland bill that we had in the House, and I know there's one in the Senate, and Representative Hansen had the wetland bill in the House. Section 90 allows some flexibility in present law for the replacement of wetlands when drained or filled, depending upon their region in the state. 91 clarifies when a replacement plan for wetlands is required for agricultural activities, including a new definition for normal farming practices. It includes a new definition for normal farming practices that does not require wetland replacement. 92 clarifies that a wetland replacement plan is not required for certain agricultural land, depending when planted with crops or enrolled in a state or federal conservation program. 93 clarifies when a wetland replacement plan is not required because of a federal approval. 94 clarifies when a wetland replacement plan is not required for routine utility or sewage treatment work. 95 reduces the amount of de minimis footage in a project that doesn't require a wetland replacement plan, depending on what type of wetland is affected in the project. 96 requires rules by Bowser on the application and implementation of wetland exemptions and the reporting of exempt wetland impacts. 97 allows Bowser to develop a professional wetland delineator certification program. 98 allows 30 days for a ruling on a wetland boundary or type appeal by the affected local unit of government. 99 authorizes Bowser to establish a fee schedule to defray the administrative cost of wetland appeals to the board not to exceed $1,000. 100 is technical to conform to the above sections on wetlands, as is 101, 102. Section 103 prohibits public access when posted by the landowner for a private creation or restoration of a wetland that is adjacent to public land or a roadway. This was a amendment by Representative Junkie to the bill. 104 authorizes a DNR water appropriation fee to recover the cost of preparing and issuing a permit by a private non-agricultural applicant. 105 defines performance-based system for the individual sewage treatment system statutes. These ISTS sections are all in the bill by Representative Knuth. Section 106 requires counties to adopt ISTS ordinances to comply with the PCA rule revisions within 2 years of the final rule adoption. 107 is technical to comply with 105. 108 allows a county to adopt an ISTS management plan utilizing an advisory committee formed by the PCA. Section 109 declares the parties to be notified by the Environmental Quality Board when a permit to release genetically engineered wild rice is issued anywhere in the United States. These wild rice sections are all from Representative Moe. 110 requires the EQB to adopt rules requiring an environmental impact statement for a release of genetically engineered wild rice. 111 is technical to comply with 110. 112 allows a county board to sell any timber, including biomass, as appraised or scaled timber. 113 and 114 provide that when the county biological survey data is available from the DNR, the commissioner of DNR must provide it to counties and cities for use in their planning activities. 115 requires the county board to make all decisions relating to these county environmental trust funds according to law. That was an amendment by Representative Rukavina. 116 extends the date for completion of the all-terrain and off-highway continuous trail by the DNR until June 30th, 2009. It was 2007. Section 117 states that the tax-forfeited land exchanged in Itasca County and sold for a proposed steel mill is exempt from payment of 3% of the sales price collected by the county auditor. This is from a bill by Representative Solberg. 118 allows the Commissioner of Natural Resources, notwithstanding other law, to terminate a timber sale permit upon the request of the permit holder and without penalty. Certain conditions first must apply. The permit had to be issued issued on or after October 1st, 2004 and before March 31st, 2006. Aspen must be the predominant species in the permit. The aspen had to be sold for at least $40 a cord. It applies only to permits where no harvest activities have occurred. The maximum amount of cords of all species to be turned back is 7,500, and all permit terminations would have to be completed by December 31st, 2007. And I know the Senate has a similar section in their bill on that. Section 119 requires the Forest Resources Council to establish a task force of up to 15 forestry stakeholders with broad responsibilities to comprehensively address emerging forest pest issues. This is also from that shade tree and forest pest bill that I described before that has a whole bunch of technical sections in it. Section 120, the Endocrine Disruptor Report, requires a report on endocrine disruptors by January 15, 2008, on strategies to prevent the entry of endocrine disruptors into state waters. This was an insertion by Chair Wagenius, as was 121, which requires a DNR report by January 1, 2008, on proposed minimum legal and conservation standards that are applied to conservation easements when they are acquired. Section 122 allows the Itasca County Auditor to lease tax-forfeited land in Minnesota Steel for a 20-year period, including provision for renewal. That's associated with Section 117 of the Solberg bill as brought to the committee. Section 123 requires a DNR study by February 15, 2008, on the protection from threats and a possible increase in the natural stands of wild rice in the state. Section 124 is technical to comply with the wild rice sections. Section 125 requires the Pollution Control Agency to establish a best practices database for ISTS management and maintenance. 126 requires Bowser to adopt temporary rules for wetland replacement and exemption provisions because of changes in the wetland law that are in this bill and that are effective for 2 years until superseded by permanent rules. Section 127 redesignates the proposed Greenleaf State Park as a new state recreation area and adds some land to that area. This was Representative Erdahl's amendment to the bill. Section 128 describes the permitted uses in the new Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area that utilizes the acres transferred last year by the University of Minnesota to the DNR in the stadium bill. Current leases for agricultural purposes will be eventually phased out with the intent to plant and restore native prairie. It creates a master planning process and a resource inventory for the land. Section 129 renames an island in Pelican Lake in St. Louis County. This was a amendment by Representative Rukavina. And Section 130 repeals statutes 89A11, which sunsetted the Forest Resources Council and which is being funded in our bill, and 103G2241 Subdivision 8, the exemption for wetland approved development because of changes in the bill, and repeals 18G16 and 8951 Subdivision 8 relating to shade tree pests as changed by the shade tree bill we put in our bill. And that's the policy sections.
Questions for members? I don't see any questions. Senate Counsel, Mr. Knoll.
Madam Chair, a couple of things before I get started. One, just to point out that some of the provisions Mr. Helen just described are in various stages in the Senate. Several of them have passed. When you see the side-by-side, they'll be included. Some of them have not quite passed yet. Some of them, the Senate Chaudhry's bill that was heard in the Finance Committee this morning. So just to let you know, but there will be some of them, like the community forestry and the drainage provisions, are all past the Senate. So those will show up in the side-by-side. There are some minor differences in the drainage buffer bill, but otherwise basically the same. I just wanted to point that out. And then, Madam Chair, you didn't go over on the House side on the riders, and I didn't know if you wanted me to the riders are in the same article on the Senate side, if you wanted me to go through the riders at all on the Senate side, or just start with the statutory language. It's up to the chairs.
We'll just start with the statutory language, because we are going to hopefully have side-by-sides tomorrow.
Great. All right, Madam Chair. Then if you look at in the Senate bill, we can start on page, find it here. It's like on page 28. The first couple sections you heard Mr. Helen describe, they're in the House file. They were part of the agency's request on this new fund that's created. That section is 11 and 12. Section 13 of the expedited permanent rules. This was in the department's game and fish bill. It was moved into another bill that went through state and local government to finance, so it was included here. It's not part of Senator Chaudhry's bill on the omnibus environment natural resources policy. Section 14, again, is that technical section. And so section 15, Mr. Helen described earlier, with the creation of that new account. Section 16 is the off-highway vehicle damage account. It's similar to what's in the House side. There are some minor differences. The committee was concerned with from going from unpermitted to illegal, whether we were losing anything, and so they decided to include both terms. So it's a little bit different on the Senate side. Section 17 is the off-highway vehicle safety and conservation program. There are some differences. Senator Chaudhry had that in his bill, Senate File 1538, and there were some differences in how this works. There's a subdivision eliminated. There's also a new safety council created, and then some other differences we can deal with in the side-by-side. Section 18 was an amendment on the Senate side, and this, Senator Bach, if I remember right, this deals with all-terrain vehicles that are 25 years old or older to basically exempt them from a requirement for registration. So that's Section 18. Section 19. This is also from Senator Chaudhry's 1538. It's the increase in the fees for registration of ATVs. These are the three-year fees that are paid, going from $30 to $45. This would match then with the snowmobile fees. It would increase that by basically $5 a year, $15 for the three-year license. Section 20, this is the maintenance. This is a little bit different from the House side on the forest roads, on what the ATV money can be spent on. The committee did a little bit of tweaking to the language, so it's a little bit different than you'll see on the House side in Section 20. Section 21, this is dealing with the rulemaking for invasive species. I think this is in another agency bill. It's carried here because some of these there were a number of provisions that had to do with fees and rulemaking that were all put into a separate bill that went through state and local government, then over to the Finance Committee, so they were included in the finance bill. Same with Sections 22 and 23, because we're going to be doing these this rulemaking, basically exempting them from rulemaking for naming infested waters. There you see them deleted from 22 and 23 with the expedited and required rules. Section 24, this is, again, as Mr. Helen pointed out, this is putting the money in the invasive species account, the newly created account rather than the water recreation account from fines. Section 25 is the new invasive species account. It's a little bit different on the Senate side because we do add, there's a non-resident hunting license fee that's added here. And then we'll also, otherwise it's basically the same in that section, but you'll see in a moment here that we do increase the surcharges on some of those. Section 26, these were a couple of bills from Senator Frederickson and Senator Dill dealing with adding rivers to the list of rivers where we have the canoe and boating routes, and you'll see there is money in the Senate bill to pay for marking those rivers. It comes from the water recreation account. Section 27, and you'll see a number of sections here that increase the watercraft fees. Basically, it's $15 on the larger boats, $10 on a number of boats, basically, if they're less than 17 feet in length. And then the canoes and kayaks and those are kept the same at the current rate. What you'll see here is it looks like we're increasing a number of them, but wherever it says by $5, that's the current fee because there's a section later on that's amended. So it's the current fee for all these watercraft is $5. And what the Senate's doing is basically the governor's recommendation to vary the fee based on the type and size of watercraft and increase it for some, which increases the amount of money for the invasive species account. Section 33. Is again that technical provision that because the money is now going to be going into the invasive species account. Section 34 is again the same as on the House side. That's that resource assessment products and services account. Section 35 is a little bit different. That's the House repeals the repealer basically to keep the Forest Resources Council and the Sustainable Forest Act going without sunset. The Senate basically chose to give it 10 more years and then to come back and revisit it in 10 years. Section 36, this is, again, it was a department recommendation. It's probably another bill that the House may have on this. It deals with the Minerals Coordinating Committee, extending them for another 4 years. Section 37, it was, again, a part of a game and fish bill, but it increased in established fees for WMAs and AMAs, and so it was included in the Senate side in the funding bill. Section 38 is similar to what's on the House side on the game and fish reports. It's kind of a technical provision, but the Senate, you'll see later on, has a deer license donation rather than a deer license surcharge. In fact, you see on the next page. Deer license donation, Section 39, what the Senate chose to do is have it be a donation, so it's a choice made when the person purchases the deer license. Section 40, this deals with the migratory waterfowl stamps and pheasant stamps where you're not going to be required, or the DNR is not going to be required to send those out in the mail, where you're going to have to pay an additional $2 fee if you want to receive those, but you'll see later on we aren't going to be required to have those on the license anymore. This again was in the department's game and fish bill because there was a little bit of a monetary provision related to this because of the change in revenue, the change in expenditure actually, from that was carried in the Senate side. The license period, this is Section 41. Senator Chaudhry had a bill, and I don't recall the number right now, but it creates the 3-year dark house and fish house license. So this is a technical provision allowing that 3-year license. Section 42, again, this was part of the department's game and fish recommendations. There will be some small reductions to the game and fish fund because we're going to allow non-residents to purchase the under 18 to purchase the small game license at the same price as a resident. license, which is, I think, $6 plus the surcharge. Section 43 was, again, part of the Department's Game and Fish Bill, which allows spouses of residents who are on active military duty to obtain a resident hunting and fishing license at the resident rate. Section 44 was a bill of Senator Jen Olson. It deals with allowing those people coming back from active service 24 months to obtain a fishing and small game license and to have one deer license during that period. So the way this works is they can fish without having a license for small game, or excuse me, fish or take small game without a license. And then for the deer, there's one during the 24-month period, there's one deer license allowed. Sections 45 and 46 are similar to what's in the House side with the adding trapping to the lifetime small game and sporting license. The one difference I'll note is that on the effective date, the Senate doesn't take effect until August 1st. I think that was a recommendation of the agency. On Section 47, this is a number of provisions that were in the Senate side that all kind of come together in one place. It's dealing with the non-resident license. And this is a kind of a technical on 41.18, and those, because we're going to allow those under 18 to get to buy it at the resident rate for youth. We're eliminating the differential license fee for archery hunting and making it just $135. Eliminating the need for a special license for non-residents to take fox or coyote. And there's also below a number of these things are probably in the Game and Fish Bill on the House side. They were carried here because they do affect the revenue to the Game and Fish Fund. You'll see in 41.29 through 41.31, that's reducing the archery deer license for those non-resident youths. And then there's a 41.32, that was a $5 surcharge that's added to non-resident hunting licenses to pay for invasive species, especially the land-based invasive species. Section 48 is the voluntary deer license donation. Again, that kind of matches up with the House where you've got the surcharge. And this is a voluntary, which can be $1 or more. I think the House side is $1 surcharge. This is $1 or more. On the non-resident fishing, again, you'll see several changes in there. You have the surcharge similar to the House in paragraph B, but in paragraph A, you have the increases in the fishing. It's about a 10% increase, and that's to pay for a provision that's going to show up a little bit later, which is going to eliminate the need for a fish house license on temporary fish and dark houses. In Section 50, you'll see that there now will be a fee for this new three-year fish house or dark house license. Again, that was a provision of Senator Chaudhry. On Section 51, again, you also have the three-year non-resident fish house license. Section 52, this matches up with the license fee for non-residents under current law have to pay a special fee to take certain animals, and there are four of them listed, and this removes fox and coyote, so the non-resident now will they need a small game license for fox, and for a coyote, there's no license required, as I understand it. A stamp required, this is again dealing with, this was from the department's Game and Fish Bill. This deals with that whole pheasant stamp and waterfowl stamp. You see both Section 53 and 54, where you're now, based on these provisions, not be required to have the stamp in possession, that the validation will be adequate. You can send in two, or give them $2 to have that mailed out to you. Section 55 deals with the fishing contest fees. This is similar to what the House side, except I think the House has put a schedule in for the fees. This just allows the commissioner to establish the fees. This is Section 56. This is the one I was referring to earlier, where if an ice house or dark house, if a fish house or dark house is not left unattended on the ice overnight, you'll not be required to have it licensed. You still have to have the number on the fish house, but you just don't have to license it. This matches up with the increase in the non-resident fishing license to basically pretty close to a wash for the Game and Fish Fund. Section 57, this was from Senator Kubley's bill on dealing with bioenergy, and this is establishing the program language for the easements that will be acquired by the Board of Water and Soil Resources for the clean energy easements. And it's basically similar language to what we have right now for the Reinvest in Minnesota, although the nature of the property rights acquired is a little bit different. And the way the easement, the payments for easements, it's not established yet what that payment system will look like. And we'll see in the appropriation sections of the bill, there's some money to get the board started on putting together a group to look at what the payment rate would be for those easements to grow bioenergy crops on their lands. And again, all of the enforcement and correction of easement boundaries, easement renewal, all of those subdivisions are comparable to the RIM easements. The big change is this technical committee on 47.4 that, as I mentioned earlier, that's where there's some money to the board to begin that process to look at the types of things that will be grown on these lands and also with the payment, the structure, and the payment system for those. Section 58 on the Senate side, this is the biomonitoring provisions. These are from Senator Sieben's bill dealing with it. I think that there are provisions in the House Human Services bill. We'll likely see that once the comparison. You didn't see that in the House side. But these are all dealing with the environmental biomonitoring and health tracking. There is money in the Senate bill from the remediation fund or from the environmental fund for this purpose. Section 60 is the review of the PBDEs, and that's this is just a portion in the also in the House Human Services bill. There's more than this. There are also other statutory provisions related to what people can use. This just provides two things. One, this three, the duties for the review, and then the participation in an interstate clearinghouse, and then there's a state procurement provision. Section 61, you saw that on the House side. That's a continuous trail designation. Section 62, you also saw on the House side, the voluntary termination of timber sale permits. There are a little bit differences. The Senate's on 50.32 says it's got to be, they had to purchase it at $50 per quart or more. And this allows a complete refund or basically use of the amount paid, the down payment, the 15% by the person, whereas I think the house was two-thirds could be applied to a new permit. So there are some differences there. We'll see later. Section 63 is, again, the biomonitoring pilot program. That's part of that biomonitoring bill of Senator Sieben's, and it is, I think many of these provisions are in the Human Services bill. Again, we'll see that in the comparison when the comparison report is done. Section 64 is again dealing with the information sharing related to that. Section 65, and we'll see this in the financing. This is a repealer. This repeals the Minerals Management Account effective on July 1 of 2008. And it is a significant difference in the financing because the Senate does not continue the Minerals Management Account, does not continue the flow of money to this account. It puts the money back in the general fund in certain instances, but in many instances, the money would go into the school trust funds. And the Senate basically stops that at the end of this fiscal year, basically at the end of June of 2007, and then we spend the money that available for it in the first year, whereas the House continues that on into the future. So that's a significant difference with the repealer. And Madam Chair, that's it for Article 1.
Questions from members? I think people are thinking about their supper. Do you want to announce our next meeting?
Sure. Madam Chair, we do intend to meet tomorrow. We've had, we've been trying to schedule in rather brief meetings around other conference committees at this point and other conflicts, so we'll probably have another meeting that won't be all that long tomorrow. But we're definitely planning to meet tomorrow, and it looks like probably going to meet at 3, is that right? Tomorrow. And stay tuned in case that changes, but that's our plan as of now. We're trying to coordinate with some other committees and with the Ag Conference Committee. And at that time, we expect we will have the side-by-sides and the final fiscal spreadsheet that we can go through, members. So we'll continue reviewing and get familiar with all the differences in the bills.
I see no further questions. Meeting is adjourned.